This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. President Ibrahim Raisi says developing relations with Africa is a priority for Iran as he sets off on an official tour of three African nations. Sudan's army rejects a proposal to allow deployment of foreign peacekeepers in the country, saying it will consider them enemy forces.
The president himself also pointed out, he sees great potential in Africa, but the difference between the Islamic Republic of Iran and other countries that have been traditionally present in the African continent is that this is based on mutual respect and mutual benefit. This is basically a win-win kind of cooperation.
The Iranian capital is hosting an annual meeting of the Asian Parliamentary Assembly's Budget and Planning Committee. Parliamentarians from over 20 countries are attending the event in Tehran. As Speaker of Iran's parliament addressed the opening ceremony, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf said Asia is returning to a center of global economic and political power. He added, return poses a challenge to the West. Ghalibaf noted the current transition in the world order can pave the way for a review of structure of international institutions such as the United Nations. APA has 42 member parliaments and 16 observers. It was formed back in 2006 with the aim of developing common strategies and promoting peace in Asia and the world.
Asia at the center of the economic global order. This is what the APA Standing Committee on Budget and Planning Summit represents this year. The purpose of this summit is to create positive changes among member countries. Today, the ancient continent of Asia, with its historical, cultural, and economic components, is at the center of global geopolitical developments.
What we are witnessing today in the context of rotation of power in the world can put Asia at the center of the global economy. This is one of the most important challenges to the Western-oriented international system.
Taking great steps to spread peace in Asian countries is another key purpose of the summit, which highlights the importance of respecting various religions and beliefs.
Convergence among different religions of the world is one of the important factors for the survival of humanity and for strengthening peace, security, and tolerance.
Representatives of countries' parliaments play an important role in institutionalizing Asian parliamentary diplomacy and allowing the countries of this continent to deal with challenges.
Attending Asian meetings can help enhance Russia's relations with other countries. We support the economic strategies that Iran has introduced, and we are ready to cooperate with them.
Such assemblies and gatherings can pave the way for further cooperation between the Asian countries.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has played a significant role in the field of diplomacy, including multilateral diplomacy. Asian Parliamentary Assembly is an important example in this regard. Farzan Ashurian, Tehran.
Iran's foreign minister has urged European countries, including Sweden, to take urgent and effective measures to deter further desecration of Islamic sanctities.
We urge the Swedish and other European authorities to take urgent and effective measures. Mr. President, any doubts or delays in condemning and preventing such actions only reinforce perception of double standards and justify abuses of freedom of expression.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks during a UN Human Rights Council meeting to debate the alarming rise in public acts of religious hatred. In the meeting, a number of Muslim states called for accountability over the desecration of the Quran, including in Sweden last month. Pakistan's top diplomat said that acts of desecration were permitted by Western governments and were carried out with a sense of impunity. The Indonesian foreign minister called the desecration of the Quran an act of Islamophobia and demanded a halt to abuse of freedom of expression. The UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk also called for efforts to combat the weaponization of religious differences for political purposes. Joining us now from Toronto is Mr. Zafar Bengish, director at the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought. Hello, sir. Always a pleasure to check in with you, Mr. Bengish. Okay, this has been a very volatile issue in the last week, and we've seen huge blowback as a result. My question to you, would things be the same if a Bible or a Torah or the book, you know, any other religious doctrine or book was burned? Would the West have been the same? Would they have had the same approach to this issue?
Clear evidence that early this year in January, when a Swedish politician, a right-wing extremist politician, Rasmus Paludan, burnt a copy of the Quran in public, who was protected by the police, guarded by the police, and when a Muslim, about a week later, sought a permit to burn a copy of the Torah in front of a synagogue, the police refused to grant him a permit to carry out that act. And the excuse they offered was that this was a provocative act and it cannot be permitted because it would offend the sensitivities of the Jewish community. So here it is, we have clear proof that when it comes to burning the copy of the Quran, permission is granted by the police not once but twice. And yet, if a Muslim wants to do something similar to another religious book, then that permission is not granted because it is viewed as being not a proper act, a provocative act, and it could hurt the sensitivities of other people. So whatever these Western governments and regimes, etc., are doing, these are deliberate acts of provocation against the Muslims. They want to insult them, they want to humiliate them, because they basically do not care for the sentiments of the Muslim people.
Why do you think that is the case? Why do you think that demonizing Islam has become somewhat acceptable in Western culture?
Well, there's a long history to this because Muslims, by and large, adhere to their principles. They refuse to accept Western hedonistic culture. And this is what bothers the Western regimes. And also, of course, the Western regimes see Muslims as not willing, and this is in the broader context, not only in Western countries, but throughout the world, that Muslims, by and large, do not submit to the aggressive and militaristic policies of the Western regimes, and they fear that Muslims will continue to resist such attempts. And they know that the Quran, as well as the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, are very dear to the Muslims. So they want to undermine their sanctity in the eyes of Muslims so that the Muslims can be taken away from their religion.
Interesting stuff. Thank you, Mr. Zafar Bangesh. It's always a pleasure to pick your brain on things. From Toronto, Mr. Zafar Bangesh, Director at Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, there joining us. Meanwhile, Sudan's Army-aligned Foreign Ministry has rejected a regional summit's proposal to allow deployment of peacekeeping forces to protect civilians in the war-ravaged country. The ministry said in a statement that Sudan will view any foreign forces deployed there as enemy forces. The summit was held in the Ethiopian capital by East African regional body IGAD on Monday, attended by Kenya, South Sudan, Djibouti, and Ethiopia. The Sudanese army refused to take part, though, accusing Kenya, which shared the talks, of favoring rival paramilitary rapid support forces, that's the RSF. Meanwhile, fighting raged on in and around the capital, Khartoum. The Sudan's conflict began back in mid-April over a power struggle between Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and his former deputy, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who commands the RSF. France joins Britain in supplying Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles called Scalp, a move that allows Ukrainian forces to hit Russian troops deep behind the front lines. French President Emmanuel Macron made the announcement at a summit of the NATO alliance in Lithuania. French sources said countries already made a delivery of the missiles. Now, Britain said in May it was supplying its own version of the missile. The French version has a range of about 250 kilometers, three times longer than Ukraine's existing missile capacities. French authorities have suggested Ukraine has given them guarantees it won't fire the missiles into Russian territory. This as Washington has vowed to supply internationally banned cluster munitions to Ukraine. The U.S. is facing a chorus of criticism over its decision, including from China.
Responsible provision of cluster munitions is highly likely to cause humanitarian issues. Humanitarian concerns and legitimate military and security needs should be addressed in a balanced manner, and the transfer of cluster munitions should be treated with prudence and restraint.
Mao said dialogue's only viable way out of the Ukraine crisis. She urged parties involved to the conflict to avoid fanning the flames of the war. Separately, North Korea's foreign minister slammed the U.S., calling its decision a dangerous criminal act. Even Washington's Western allies, including the U.K., Canada, and Spain, have refused to provide the munitions. Cluster bombs were banned by a U.N. convention backed by more than 120 countries. Controversial weapons are considered a major threat to civilians as they release larger numbers of smaller bomblets that can kill indiscriminately over a wide area. The British state broadcaster, the BBC, faces a fifth day of media grilling as fervor over sexual misconduct by one of its presenters deepens. Unnamed presenter was already accused of paying more than £35,000 to a teenage drug addict for explicit pictures and videos over 3 years. He's now been found to have also sent abusive messages to a second person. Now, Britain's leading broadcaster has already been rocked by claims of mishandling this particular probe. Now, critics say the corporation took a very long time to investigate the allegations against the presenter. Campaign group Defund the BBC says the row shows the broadcaster has not been able to police itself and instead chose to whitewash the issue. The broadcaster earlier said that it paused the probe to allow police to examine the circumstances. New data suggests the UK's unemployment rate has risen above expectations to 4% in the 3 months to May. Now, more than a million Britons are unemployed at the moment amid stubbornly high inflation. Saeed Pirza has your details out of London.
The wheels of the British economy are turning, but not fast enough, and the state of the job market is one indicator. The UK's Office for National Statistics says the unemployment rate jumped to 4% into 3 months to May this year, up from 3.8% previously, driven by wage rises and by people out of work for up to 12 months.
Well, employment levels are high, but the trouble with Britain is we got less people working than pre-COVID. So we got record levels in employment. We're not far off the record levels, but the number of people in jobs has gone down because we've got this sort of 600,000 to 900,000 people seem to have disappeared from the workforce.
Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt has put getting Britons back into work at the heart of his plan for economic growth. Yet more than 1 million people are still unemployed. Let's see how the UK economy compares with other advanced economies. The Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, says year-on-year inflation in the group of seven wealthy nations fell to 4.6% in May this year, down from 5.4% in April, reaching its lowest level since September 2021, making the UK the only country in the G7 where inflation is at 8.7%.
Well, the cause of inflation is not the workers asking for wage rises. It's the printing of money. You see, central banks want to blame everybody but themselves. They printed the money. The US did it, the UK did it, the Europeans did it. But, of course, Britain has the additional problem of Brexit, and that has pushed up inflation costs across the economy. It's the only explanation for the big differential.
The Bank of England, whose job it is to control inflation, has responded with increasing the interest rate 13 times so far, with more interest rate rises on the horizon. That has seen mortgage rates soar, making repayments more difficult for homeowners, many of whom have seen their salaries squeezed by inflation, setting off a tidal wave of public sector strikes over the past year.
The government here has promised labor market reforms, including expanding free childcare next year, hoping to encourage more and more people to go back to work and fill in those hundreds of thousands of vacancies that it says are fueling inflation. But the fact remains that the rate of economic growth and inflation in the UK remain particularly bad compared to similar economies. Saidpur is up, London.
That's a wrap for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. the Zionist regime and Zionist settlers occupying the Palestinian lands still continue the slaughter of the innocent Palestinians in the West Bank of River Jordan. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kayhan International noted, although the massacre of the Palestinians has for the moment stopped in Jenin, the murderous Zionists continue the slaughter of the innocents in other parts of the West Bank of River Jordan. Recently, Israeli regime troops, in what is being called an act of invasion, suddenly attacked Nablus and Ramallah to kill more Palestinians. Even as an EU delegation visited Jenin to confirm the intensity of the Zionist crimes, two men, Hamza Maqbul and Khairi Shahin, were killed in Nablus, while the village of Safa in the neighborhood of Ramallah, Abdul Jawad Saleh was shot in cold blood by Israeli regime forces. These crimes against humanity have the full backing of the super terrorist, the United States. Even if the regime in Washington denies its complicity and pretends to be a peacemaker. The Americans are the open enemies of Arabs and the rest of the Muslim world, despite their pretensions of friendship with a few gullible regimes and deceiving them to establish diplomatic ties with the illegal Zionist entity. The only solution to the chronic question of Palestine is mobilization of all resources for ending the illegitimate existence of Israel. If not, crisis will continue to worsen the plight of the sons of the soil. The UN is not expected to redress the sufferings of Palestinians. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres may have condemned the organized slaughter of the people of Jenin, but his stance is not going to change anything in the usurped land. His refusal to retract his condemnation of the Zionist regime forces for using excessive force and harming civilians during the recent reducing of several parts of Jenin to rubble, in face of harsh reaction by the Zionist regime, may look brave. It is good news for the press and provides ingredients for political pundits, who are not always correct. Other than this, the world body is totally helpless and cannot force the Zionist regime to obey international law. If there is any real international law, then there is no ground for the existence of Israel in the first place, since there is no justice in spite of the claims of politicians, lawyers, analysts, and heads of government, the cancerous tumor continues to spread. In such a state, the crying need is for Muslims worldwide to knit ranks and deliver the final blow to the Zionist regime. In the meantime, Wafa News Agency reported, groups of police-guarded extremist Israeli Jewish settlers performed recently a provocative incursion into the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds, according to witnesses. Witnesses said scores of Zionist settlers entered the compound through the Moroccan gate in groups and performed rituals there under the protection of Israeli regime police officers. Since 2003, the Zionist regime occupation authorities have been allowing Zionist settlers into the compound almost on a daily basis, with the exclusion of Friday, the Muslim day of rest and worship. The Zionist regime captured East Al-Quds, where Al-Aqsa Mosque is located, during the Six-Day War in 1967, in a move never recognized by the international community. Israeli regime occupation forces on July 9th and last night detained at least 9 Palestinians from multiple districts in the occupied West Bank, according to sources. In the north of the West Bank, the Zionist regime troops detained a Palestinian youth as he attempted to cross the Israeli regime military checkpoint of Dotan to the west of Jenin. In Nablus, a Palestinian youth was also detained by Zionist regime army after the troops raided and tampered with the contents of his home, located in the Asira Street. In the south of the West Bank, 2 Palestinians were detained by Israeli regime troops in the city of Al-Khalil. A military raid was carried out in the town of Yatta, which resulted in the detention of 2 Palestinians. The Zionist regime occupation forces also carried out a military raid in Tormosaya town, north of Ramallah, where they detained a 26-year-old youth following intense clashes that erupted in the town. Meantime, the Zionist regime occupation forces raided Shafat refugee camp, northeast of occupied Al-Quds, and detained 2 Palestinians after breaking into their houses.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, and I'm Atar, the host of this program. We have 2 guest speakers in today's discussion, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to your show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
You're welcome, brother, and Brother Ali Alavian, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thank you for having me here.
So regarding the main features of the hegemonic powers in today's world and the challenges that they are facing, for today's discussion we want to get a very important topic which was also tackled by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the Supreme Leader of Iran, and that is the challenges that the hegemonic powers have regarding the Islamic values in today's world. When you look at the pictures of some Muslim lands from outside, you find them very much similar in terms of architecture to the Western world nowadays, with the big, big towers and the big, big buildings, okay? So I do want to say that, yes, when they are attacking the Muslim lands and the Muslim values, they are attacking your system of values. Mm-hmm. So the system of values refers to your lifestyle, your culture. And the interesting point is that when they want to make documents about the Muslim lands, they do not capture your part of the country, which is like a Western world, but your original, aboriginal, we can say, cultures and the system of values. And they win many movies, and they win Oscar, they win Golden Globe, they win so many, you know, prizes all around the world. So the system of values is good. Very but true. As good as it shows you how simple you are, how servant
third
you are,
world.
Okay, third world country you are, and okay, wow, what a country you are. But when it comes to the exact system of values, for example, looking for justice, looking for freedom, Muslims are free, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They are not being oppressed. Then it becomes a challenge mm-hmm. for the Western powers. Now we have to attack them. Now we have to put discrimination among them. Now we have to put...
And what I want to pinpoint, and one important point, brother, before we move towards, we actually Sayyid. Go to a Sayyid. Actually they are trying, they are making very good lies to actually to deceive the whole world. Why? Under the name of democracy, this democratic movement actually, unlike before, that they came to actually to directly tell people that this is the power that we have and we need to colonize you and we need to take your power and to take your resources. Now they've got mature and they know what to do and how to deal with the people. Under the name of the democracy, they go and, for example, they attack one group and they let some other group, which is their servant, to be in power. Look. Like what the kind of way that they behave Saudi Arabia. Is there any democracy in Saudi Arabia, but they know it as a democratic nation and they do not even attack it once in a blue moon? You see? But in a country...
Yeah, even they were harsher than Iran in terms of the women rights. Mm. They did not let the women to drive up 5-4 years ago, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
The women had no right to vote maybe in the country.
And they didn't have even ID.
There is no voting.
There's no worry. No, I mean, what can... And all of a sudden, when Bin Salman comes to the scene, I mean, the son, may Allah curse him, you know, for the blood of the people, of the children of Yemen on his hand. When all of a sudden he comes to the scene, wow, the most famous singers from the U.S. are invited to the U.S. The most important WWE wrestlings are held over there. You know, the car race is over there, singers come over there, porn stars come over there. Is this a democracy?
Mm-hmm.
This is not the system of the values, brother.
Yeah.
You are losing your system of values day by day. And believe me, if this line continues, people are ready to ban their Hajj pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are the key holder, man, over there. What are you doing? Are you changing, for example, the Jeddah and the, you know, the other cities of the Saudi Arabia into what? A bar or a whorehouse or something like that? This is what, you know, and they are trapped. You know, like Trump said, we are milking you.
Mm.
Okay? We're milking you. Is it? Well, could you remember the picture Trump was showing to Bin Salman? These are the new facilities, the missiles and the airplanes and this and that. And you want to buy them?
$400 billion.
Yeah. And the wild them and we milk you. Okay? Mm. So this is the milking sheep and we have the milking goats.
And they're doing the same in other countries, but they do not call it directly, we're milking you. But they do milk the others.
Yes.
I don't want to name any other countries, even in our neighborhood. They are doing even worse than that under the name of democracy. But they are actually killing people, oppressing nations. But the outcome of which is to annihilate in their own view, in their
That's
own
right.
eyes. Annihilate what
That's
Islam
right.
wants
but,
and what
okay.
Islam is.
But Sayyid Mohsen Nawawi, I think the problem is also from the side of the planners and the Muslim lands too, not to introduce these Islamic values in a thorough manner to its people and apply them also in your countries. Because the system of values over there, but how to apply them and how to make them applicable with today's daily life in the 21st century is also very important. It's difficult, but it's important, isn't it?
That is true. And the main reason is obviously when Muslim Ummah has forgot its own values, what can you expect from them?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Western enemies, they are basically attacking the Muslim Ummah. They want to change this way of thinking. They want to make them their slaves. But when they forgot about their own values, then no one can help them. It is the duty of the scholars, basically.
Yes.
It is the duty of, the education industry. Why I said industry? Because in the West, they call it as an industry.
That's right.
It is the duty of scholarly people. that they need to basically convey the values, and they need to remind the values which they have. You know, the system in the school is now, unfortunately, for example, if I give you the example of Pakistan, for example, or other countries, if I can name them.
Yes.
The majority of school, there is a public school system, for example, that is for the poor people who do not have any money. And there is other school, private sector. Most of them, for example, in Pakistan, I can just name City School, Beacon House, I don't know. There are other schools. They all are either they have the syllabus of Oxford or Cambridge or yes. America.
Yes.
Now, when you teach your kids such syllabuses, mm-hmm. they're not going to learn about the values, the original values which are said by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's right.
Number one. Number two, you know, English language, it is an international language, mm-hmm. no doubt.
Yes.
We accept it. But this is not the main language. The main point is the people nowadays are trying to learn English.
Yes.
From the very basic, they're teaching their kids the English language. And now there is a level, for example, in the same countries, that the kids, they cannot even speak their mother language,
that's
which
right.
is, for example, Urdu, Punjabi, for yes. example, like any.
But they kind of speak English.
They can speak English.
Once I was talking to a scholar in Qom City, he was an Ayatollah. He told me that I do not let my kid to get into learn English language, an Iranian, from very beginning, I mean 7, 8 years old. Say, why? This is a good age. He said, because first I have to make him familiar with his own system of values, okay, in terms of the language, system, culture, everything. And you know that learning a language brings with itself its own culture. But if a guy, for example, as a teenager, 15, 16 years old, and then he's, I mean, the basis on the foundation are strong now.
Strong, yes.
Then he's going to, for example, learn English language. But the case is, brother, this, that unfortunately, the people who are in charge of leading the countries in the Muslim lands themselves are not familiar with these concepts, are not familiar with the system of the values in the true sense of the word. And they are also playing with the same cards that the Westerners are playing.
It's because, unfortunately, there was a time when the Western world was ruling the Muslim lands as well.
Yeah,
for example,
colonizing.
You know, the Britons, the East India Company, has ruled subcontinent India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka for, you know, many years. And they have their impacts when they were leaving. They divided everyone into different groups, and then they left. You know, Australia is under the England's, you know, we can say like kingdom.
Yes.
Canada is part of that. In Indo-Pak, we can say like subcontinent, like they were there. In Iran, we can see like the French and Americans who were the
Portuguese.
Main, yes. And the rest of the world, if you see, the Muslim Ummah basically is affected by these people who came into power, who oppressed and who basically conquered, in a way, these lands. And later, these lands were freed by themselves. The Ottoman Empire, it was obviously, you know, dispersed by the same powers, the Western powers.
That's right.
Why they attacked the Ottoman emperorship? It's because they didn't want it, like they never wanted Muslims to be in the power.
That's right.
Similarly, when you give the example of bin Salman, it's again the same thing.
Yes.
It's a guy who is an Arab mm-hmm. and who is living in a place, most sacred place in the world, like obviously Muslims go for the Hajj and all those.
Yes.
But even in the same land where the Prophet
removed
or eliminated all these things, mm-hmm. the examples which you gave.
Yes.
You know, the things which he eliminated, he is bringing those things back.
Yes.
Before the Prophet, people used to do Hajj while they were naked.
And the sound is about the
nudity,
silence of the Muftis over there. Mm.
No, it's not because of that. Because, you know, the news says that. It's apparent, like the Western news also says that.
Mm-hmm.
Many Muftis or the scholars who were against these things,
mm-hmm.
they are in prison.
Yes.
Or some of them has got killed by bin Salman and his you know, regime.
Yes.
So this Ali Saud bin Salman is not a criteria. Having the keys of Kaaba is not the criteria of knowing that this person is on the right side and the others are on the wrong. Because many of the, you know, many of the princes, The princes in Saudi Arabia are in prison. Mm-hmm. We can see, you know, that columnist who got killed in Turkey.
Jamal Khashoggi.
Yeah.
Jamal Khashoggi.
Yes. Why he got killed? What was the reason? You know, other princes like in Turkey or the other countries.
He was a journalist, yes.
Yeah.
Man, he was suffocated for 10 minutes. Then he was chopped off into different pieces. Mm. Then he was melted into the acid. Wow, man, what? Come on. And the world is being quiet. At the time of Trump presidency,
and it is
the world was quiet. Now the Biden presidency, the world is quiet. They say, okay, shall we look for that or shall we not?
And they're still observant in the Human Rights Commission.
They call it democracy and they call it justice, according to them.
Yes, brother.
No, the surprise is that they are still observer of the Human Rights Commission in UN, and no one says anything. And America is also, and the West is defending them.
Yes.
As their friend, as a country that actually follows human rights.
Let me make one more thing clear, that in the world, if we see, these powers, the Western powers, they're talking about democracy and the justice. Who started the world war?
Mm-hmm.
Who were those people?
That's
these
right.
were these people who started, and they had the fight.
Okay.
World War One, World War Two.
Yes.
How many people got killed? Mm-hmm. You know, if United Nations was not built, you know, if it wasn't created, this war was gonna obviously continue till now. And still, they're looking for a war. For example, the things which Israel is doing, the things which America has done in Iraq, in Syria, you know, funding the ISIS and, you know, other terrorist groups, Taliban, these all are funded by America.
That's all right. The people, both men and women, have to get back and have a return to their, you know, true system of values. I could remember that recently in the news, I saw that the female German team of gymnastics, has covered all their bodies from neck to toe. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they said that when in the previous years we were over there with naked eyes, the men over there mocked us and betrayed us. And they looked at us as a sexual toy. So now we are covering from neck to toe to not have a sexual look at us, okay? This is an Islamic value. I mean, this is what that covering your body would bring protection,
brother,
to you.
This is the rationalism that Islam actually focuses on.
Yes.
And one of the key, let's say, points that even the hegemonic power is attacking Islam for, this rationalism is going to spread in the whole world. Mm. Look, when people slowly want to find themselves, be back to the true teachings of the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny, they are actually attacking this.
That's
and this
right.
is what we have been actually saying from over four decades.
Yeah. And unfortunately, from inside, some people are attacking it too. This is the sad news. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, for your nice elaboration regarding how to revive the Islamic system of values. That is really a big challenge for the Westerners and hegemonic powers to tackle. First, they are attacking your system of values, then they are attacking your land, then they are attacking your resources, and day by day you can see that in terms of clothes, hairstyle, lifestyle, everything, food style, you are a Westerner but living in the eastern part of the world. And this is the sad news.
Mm-hmm.
It was very kind of you, dear listeners. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. This series are produced by Brother Mahmoud. Please bring your comments and ideas. We can say on our email address, coi@irib.ir. Also, you can visit our YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Do not forget, too, to visit our website, parstoday.com/Ian, Call of Islam page. See another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanillah.
My eyes to all the signs you put in my way. every breath I take.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsetodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsetodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
In the United States, the House Oversight Committee has subpoenaed Hunter Biden's ex-business partner, Devon Archer, who served with Hunter Biden on the board of the Ukrainian energy company, Burisma. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Congressional Republicans have subpoenaed Hunter Biden's former business partner Devon Archer, demanding he sit for a deposition this week. The Oversight Committee has been investigating the business dealings of several members of President Joe Biden's family. Kentucky Republican James Comer wrote in a letter to an attorney for Devon Archer stating that he played a significant role in the Biden family's business deals abroad, including, but not limited to, China, Russia, and Ukraine. Additionally, while undertaking these ventures with the Biden family, your client met with then-Vice President Joe Biden on multiple occasions, including in the White House, wrote Comer, the Oversight Committee chairman. Devon Archer's potential testimony to the GOP House Oversight Committee is a significant milestone in the congressional probe. Devon Archer served alongside Hunter Biden on the board of Burisma, a Ukrainian energy company, beginning in 2014. During this period, then-Vice President Joe Biden was deeply involved in Ukraine policy, an era when his opponents say the energy firm was involved in corruption. An independent forensic review of Hunter Biden's laptop data by CBS News confirmed hundreds of communications between Hunter Biden and Devon Archer, specifically emails that suggest working meals were arranged before or after Burisma board meetings. Devon Archer is widely believed to have facilitated Hunter Biden's entry onto Burisma's executive board. In February, Kentucky Republican James Comer informed Hunter Biden and the president's brother, James, that he is seeking documents and communications from the Bidens as part of his committee's probe into any possible involvement by the president in their financial conduct, in particular in foreign business deals with individuals who were connected to the Chinese Communist Party. James Comer accused them in his letter of receiving significant amounts of money from foreign companies without providing any known legitimate services. White House spokesman Ian Sams tweeted on 10th of May that the committee was really just microwaving old debunked stuff, whilst offering no evidence of any wrongdoing by the president. House Republicans have shown no evidence of any policy decisions influenced by anything other than U.S. national interests, Sams wrote. After reviewing thousands of records subpoenaed from four banks, the House Oversight Committee said in an interim report last month that some Biden family members, associates, and their companies received more than $10 million from foreign entities, including payments made during and after President Joe Biden's vice presidency. But the White House countered that Republican investigators could not point to a single Joe Biden policy that was unduly influenced. The 36-page interim GOP report released by James Comer accused some Biden family members and associates of using a complicated network of more than 20 companies, mostly LLCs formed when Joe Biden was vice president, and used incremental payments over time to conceal large financial transactions. From a historical standpoint, we've never seen a presidential family receive these sums of money from adversaries around the world, James Comer said. After the report's 11th of May release, Abby Lowell, an attorney for Hunter Biden, said the committee was redoing old investigations that found no evidence of wrongdoing by Joe Biden. Devon Archer was convicted in 2018 of securities fraud and conspiracy to commit securities fraud for his role in a scheme to defraud a Native American tribe and multiple pension funds. His conviction was overturned later that year, and U.S. District Judge Ronnie Abram wrote in her decision, she was left with an unwavering concern that Archer is innocent of the crimes charged. The conviction was later reinstated by a federal appeals court. Devon Archer lost an appeal of that decision earlier this month. He has not yet been sentenced. The national broadcaster Fox News Channel has also covered this story. The House Oversight Committee has subpoenaed Hunter Biden's former business partner Devon Archer to appear for a deposition this week in its investigation into the Biden family's business dealings. Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, wrote in a letter to Archer's attorney that he played a significant role in the Biden family's business deals abroad, including but not limited to China, Russia, and Ukraine. Additionally, whilst undertaking these ventures with the Biden family, your client met with then-Vice President Joe Biden on multiple occasions, including in the White House, James Comer wrote in the letter. Devon Archer, who served with Hunter Biden on the board of Ukrainian energy company Burisma, lost an appeal last week to have his unrelated 2018 conviction and one-year federal prison sentence for a scheme to defraud a Native American tribe thrown out of court. Hunter Biden did not have a connection to the fraud scheme. The committee has been seeking communications and related documents as part of its probe into possible involvement by President Joe Biden in any financial crimes or misconduct, particularly in relation to the family's foreign business dealings. According to CBS News, James Comer accused the Biden family in his letter of receiving significant amounts of money from foreign companies without providing any known legitimate services. The New York Post has also covered the same story. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer on Monday issued a subpoena to former Hunter Biden business partner Devon Archer, demanding testimony related to the panel's probe into the Biden family's overseas business schemes. The subpoena compels Devon Archer to testify before the Oversight Committee on Friday morning on Capitol Hill. A source familiar with the proceedings told the New York Post on Monday that James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, has also issued subpoenas to two banks for Archer's financial records and those of Elena Baturina and Rosemont Seneca Thornton. Rosemont Seneca Thornton, a company linked to Archer and first son Hunter Biden, reportedly received $3.5 million wire transfer from Baturina, Russia's richest woman, and the widow of Moscow's famously corrupt former mayor Yuri Lushkov in 2014. Both information that the committee has reviewed and public reporting indicates that Devon Archer played a significant role in the Biden family's business deals abroad, including but not limited to China, Russia, and Ukraine. James Comer writes in a letter informing Devon Archer's attorney, Matthew Schwartz, that his client has been subpoenaed. Additionally, while undertaking these ventures with the Biden family, your client met with then-Vice President Joe Biden on multiple occasions, including in the White House. Devon Archer's testimony is critical to the committee's investigation, James Comer wrote. Devon Archer was Hunter Biden's business partner in a number of transactions involving foreign nationals and foreign companies. Archer is associated with corporate entities that the committee has identified and the Biden family's role in each of them. Furthermore, he has significant information regarding the purpose of these companies and knowledge of relevant documents related to the committee's investigation, James Comer adds. Devon Archer, 48 years old, was convicted and sentenced in February of last year to 1 year and 1 day in prison for his role in a scheme to defraud a Native American tribe of some $60 million in bonds. Devon Archer's appeal was rejected by an appellate court last week.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.